When the sun rises, I wake up and chase my dreams. I won't regret when the sun sets, 'cause I live my life like I'm a beast.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Natural Born Hunter podcast. I'm your host, Will Bradley, along with my co-host, Phil the Iceman Mendoza. Phil, how you doing tonight?
Good, man. How are you, Will?
Pretty good. What have you been up to?
Just trying to get my building finished so we can get my archery shop back open.
How's that going?
Typical city/county employees that are overworked and underpaid allegedly and don't want to get my stuff done. So we'll just leave it at that.
So it's going smooth and really fast.
That's it, man. That's it.
We are joined tonight by our guest, AJ DeRosa. And for those of you who do not know about AJ, he is a hunter out of the Northeast, as well as a writer, publisher, producer, videographer, kind of a jack of all trades, you know, author, writer of the book The Urban Deer Complex, which I believe right now sits at number 2 on the Amazon list of hunting books. Is that right, AJ?
For deer hunting books. Specifically.
Deer are the most popular animal to hunt, so therefore, you know, might as well be number 1.
Yeah, I can't complain about that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So what have you been up to?
Mostly film production. I think a lot of people expected more writing out of me recently. For anybody that follows the websites, there's definitely been a lot of content that's been brought up. But we're sitting on a lot of video content that's going to be launching over the next 3 months. Yeah. It's going to kind of take it all by storm, really.
I'm actually pretty excited to see that. I know some of the guys who listen to the podcast have checked out. I think it's the video you have up on huntergreen.org.
The original red meat. That film was certainly very controversial. I did catch a lot of backlash for that film, but that film did go viral.
Now, what kind of backlash did you catch? Was it over the scenes at the slaughterhouse? Was that the stuff?
It did relate to farming. Some people interpreted that film specifically as an anti-farming film. It certainly wasn't our intentions. And our next film that comes out, it will be launched in October, called The Carbon Wingprint. We've been a lot more we paid a lot more attention to the idea that we're not condemning farming or anything else, but we're certainly condemning corporate farming, you know, the whole Monsanto's agenda.
Right. I mean, that's pretty highly debated topic now in the news and everywhere you go, GMOs and all that business. And as the locavore becomes more common, it's nice to see someone in the hunting industry kind of taking up that flag, if you will, and going with it. If you had to describe yourself and your take on hunting, how would you put it?
I grew up hunting, so I think for any of us that grew up hunting, there's been a serious evolution process as far as how we look at hunting. I look at hunting today a lot differently than I did 10 years ago, certainly, differently than I did as a child and differently than I looked at it even 3 years ago. I was certainly in that category of trophy obsessed, you know, deer hunter. I've been there. I would be a liar if I said I didn't enjoy it. But the face of hunting's changing, and the organic movement has specifically done that. And I've been very passionate about the organic movement, even outside of hunting. Vegetables, you name it, everything I try to buy organic. I'm very passionate about sustainability in general. And that's definitely translated into a lot of our work. HunterGreen.org was specifically created to be a political platform, just because we want to really separate that from anything else that we did with Dangerous Cow Publishing or the Urban Deer Complex, because appropriately there is a time and a place for this stuff, and there are certainly people that don't agree with some of these agendas. There's plenty of people in the hunting community that, you know, support GMOs, and rightfully so. We don't want to alienate them from our other content. That website, the films that have come out of that have been specifically geared towards a very, you know, specific political agenda.
And what is the political agenda?
Essentially to push that concept of, you know, the idea of, like you said, the local boar movement. We're passionate about sustainability, passionate about organic, essentially taking a different take on hunting. The primary goal, ironically, of HunterGreen.org is to not target hunters, but to target non-hunters. You know, I live in eastern Massachusetts. It's a very liberal state. It's a very liberal area. I mean, I'm only 30 minutes outside of Boston. We had a local hunt over here that was done on conservation land that I actually took out a guy who had never hunted, you know, a day in his life. You know, diehard liberal guy that was an outdoorsman but was never a hunter. And that's a lot of what we have here, people that are shopping at Whole Foods, people that are interested in the idea of being organic and are suddenly saying, oh, wait a minute. You know, maybe hunting that deer in my backyard is the most sustainable method for me to get my meat. Maybe it is the safest way. And that's really what we're targeting towards, is these people that are actually questioning these things and saying, hey, maybe hunting isn't what it is, you know, we thought it was. And that's a big thing we're trying to do. We're trying to break the stigma of hunting and say, listen, hunting isn't, you know, what necessarily what the Outdoor Channel or the Sportsman Channel, other major networks or magazines have portrayed. There is a different group of people in here, and there are people that are willing to welcome you into this and say, hey, listen, you know, this can be more than about, you know, high-fiving over a dead deer or trying to get the biggest rack. I mean, this is about a lifestyle. It's about, you know, reconnecting with our predatory roots. And that's really what we push.
You know, it's funny you mention that, because I was at a train to hunt competition this weekend. For those of you who may be tuning in just to hear AJ and haven't heard of Train to Hunt, it's a outdoor bow hunting athletic competition similar to Spartan races, only you do it with a bow. And a lot, it was funny, we were talking about a very similar subject, and one of the things came up is, one of the guys said, I hate the term shooter buck. I hate that term. He's like, you know, any deer can, well, not any deer, but there's a lot of deer out there that can be shooters. You know, you don't have to just say.
It's in the eyes of the shooter.
yeah, it really is. Like, I'm seeing the deer the guys are passing up, but I'm going, would have shot that.
Trust me, I have plenty of regrets in my days of passing up bucks that I didn't deem shooter, and later said, wow, that was dumb.
Yeah. You know, I think we've all had those moments of things we passed up early in the season that come the last day of hunting season, we're sitting there going, boy, I'm hungry. And then it's my other not so favorite saying that I probably said way too often, that if it's brown, it's down.
Well, we are from the Northeast after all. So.
You know, I believe you're our first guest from the Northeast, which I'm also very excited about. You know, there's not a lot of us here that, I mean, maybe you know more than I do, that are just tired of those grip and grin trophy shots. You know, I guess I would call it the shallow portrayal of what a hunter is.
I mean, I think it's a very complicated subject. I mean, obviously, I've been known recently for writing some online content that was very aggressively towards the subject. Like, for instance, the article I wrote, The End of the Hero Shot, which that's what it is. It's the hero shot. For anybody in film, you know, we've all read the Outdoor Channel standard issue. You need to have this many minutes of this many minutes of that, and this many minutes of the hero shot. Our generation, or you know, not even our generation, but anybody right now in hunting is realizing that this is the end of the hero shot. And it's not that what we did was necessarily disrespectful. It's a culture that outsiders don't understand. And hunters only represent 2% of the population in the U.S. And at the end of the day, this new end of the hero shot push, this ideal of you know, making the animal more important than the hunter's victory is just a new theme of this generation, and it's a user-friendly theme is really what it is.
You know, it's funny you mentioned that, the generational gap. When I look at people from my grandfather's generation, I mean, yeah, they would take the pictures with the deer and all that, but it was a lot more about going out there together, you know, and sharing that experience and sharing the hunt and the whole kind of ritual that goes into hunting. I was reading the Urban Deer Complex, and you're a very ritualistic hunter, or very obsessive, and pay attention to a lot of the details. And to me, when I read that book and I read how your season really doesn't necessarily end for you, the hunting season never really ends.
No, for me, it's honestly the most honest way I could describe it is it's addictive behavior. I'm either in it or I'm not in it. A lot of people don't realize that last year I did take the year off from deer hunting. I think a lot of people are shocked by that because the book came out in June and obviously deer season wasn't too far behind. But I actually spent my season rough grouse hunting up in northern New Hampshire. Every chance I got to get away, I went up there. I mean, other than taking my brother out bow hunting for deer in this area, I didn't pick up bow to deer hunt a single day this year. And that really gets back to that idea of, like you were saying, traditions, the way our, you know, our fathers, our grandfathers. I spent a lot of time up in camp. My uncle's got a camp up in New Hampshire. It's essentially, I think we lost him. Did we lose you? Oh.
Yep, sorry. We had people.
That's all right.
Technical difficulty. If you could just repeat that.
So anyways, I spent a lot of time up in Arrow, New Hampshire this year, and my uncle owns a camp up there, and it's about 4+ miles into the woods, and I did a lot of rough grouse hunting up there. It's that old culture. It's a different generation, and actually one of the films that we have releasing called Searching is about that rough grouse hunt, but specifically more than the rough grouse hunt, it's about the dying camp culture in America. And honestly, I don't want to say that's for the whole country or whatever else, but I do know for us in New England, camp culture is dying. There's less guys that own camps up in northern New England. There's less people because of jobs, because of the economy or anything else, have the ability to get to these camps. And I watched my father and uncle hunt up there. And, you know, my father's, you know, a little over 60 now, and same with my uncle. And these guys used to, you know, they would fight for camp space, to sleep on the floor, to deer hunt up there. I mean, just a culture that I didn't have that, you know, especially as an urban hunter, it's something that I didn't experience. And it's dying, and it's sad. And to watch the two of them reflect on what they did up there and, you know, stories from 40 years ago or 30 years ago, you know, when they were my age, is it's fascinating. And it's a huge generational gap. And there's a lot of factors that went into that.
What do you think is the big factor that's killing camp culture?
Definitely work ethics. I mean, for me, I work, you know, anywhere from 60, 70 hours a week. Going 3 days, you know, to go hunting somewhere that I have to take a 5-hour drive to is just unrealistic. I mean, and in the context of it's one thing to bird hunt, and that's part of the reason why I spent my time bird hunting up there. It's another thing to deer hunt. I mean, as you've seen from my book, I live, you know, when it comes to deer hunting, you have to live that lifestyle. If you want to be successful in an area that people aren't traditionally successful. And the thing is it's a full-time commitment. You can't, you know, travel 4 hours to look for sign or understand what's going on. I mean, I talk a lot in my book about time commitment and, you know, doing things like, you know, taking a different drive to work just to, you know, cut through hunting areas that I'm hunting or whatever else, to scout and to utilize that time. And that's something you can't do with a camp. And that's killing camp culture, because you don't drive up to northern New Hampshire to hunt deer and think that any, you know, that it's really going to be a luck thing. I mean, besides, you know, classic woodsman skills like the Benoit method of hunting, stuff like that, which is, you know, a very specific culture. And it's one of those dying cultures. It's tough. You know, I grew up hunting in the Berkshires, Western Massachusetts, and seeing a deer out there was like a scat, you know, a Sasquatch, you know, sighting Sasquatch. It's just, it doesn't happen. You know, like, the deer populations are, you know, there's 5 deer per square mile. There's a square mile of woods. You know, you come to where I live here, there's 30 to 40 deer per square mile, and there's not a square mile of woods. You know, it's just a different world.
And for those of you who haven't heard of the Benoit method, that's the method of tracking deer, which actually in the Adirondacks north of us is fairly popular and becoming – I've seen it become more popular lately as we have, I'd say, 3 to 4 local guys who are really good at it and will teach clinics and stuff on tracking. But other than that, I know what you're saying. The Adirondacks used to be – a very popular spot for deer camps, and now I'd say they're also on the decline, probably just as bad as in New England.
Sad.
It is sad. It's very sad.
It's a dying culture.
I think makes it the most sad is it's a culture I've always really enjoyed, is that camp life culture. Phil, do you guys, is it like that out in the West, that camp life culture is a more tent life culture?
Yeah, you know what we have out here, it's what I grew up hunting. Of course, mule deer and elk is a totally different game from the whitetail game anyway. So, you know, I grew up and we would wall tent, you know, 5 to 7 days and we'd hunt out of there. But as far as just the experience that you get from that type of hunting, I tell you what, that's what I grew up, that's what I learned to do. And you know, the type of, you know, everything from cutting your wood, prepping your wood for the week, and when we get an animal. When I first started hunting, I mean, you know how big an elk is, right? It's 500 plus pounds. My dad and my uncles would drag elk out whole, and I mean, they weren't hunting 100 yards off the road. They would, you know, you'd go up dirt road, wall tent, and we'd go in 2 to 4 or 5 miles. And they would drag an elk out whole. And I tell you, I was just thinking about this last week, you know, with the whole train to hunt and working and meat pack and learning to, you know, move a lot of weight. And I think that was something that I learned from a very young age in that experience of that type of hunting. Because, like I said, we would go out, and I never got to experience dragging an elk out whole. That was a little bit before I was able to go hunt with them. So I'm more modernized with, you know, we started hunting with horseback. But going back to that, the whole reason that they said that they would carry an elk out whole was just to see it hanging in camp. They want to see all the other camps around, because you go up where we'd go hunt around a lake, and there was 10, 15 other camps around there. And just so that way, there was only so many people willing to put in the work to drag an elk out whole. And there was times where there was 2 or 3 elk hanging whole in my dad and my uncle's camp. So those are the things that I never got to experience, but I get to hear the stories. And I guess even hearing some of those stories in that kind of atmosphere is something that I cherish, and I hope to someday maybe give my kids a little taste about that. But, yeah, it's very much – hunting anymore is very much more modernized. I see guys trying to get back to that, you know – you know, out here it's backpack hunting, and it's lightweight gear, and you know, how long can you stay out, and how much of a badass are you to live in the mountains for 10 days? But as far as that atmosphere of, you know, tradition and you know, the teachings and the learnings that my dad and my uncles passed to me, man, it's not there anymore.
You miss out a little bit on that camaraderie, I think.
Yeah.
Which I have been fortunate, and one of the reasons I started hunting is because I had some friends who hunted, and I was kind of tired of bumming venison off them. And it's pouring in the fall in the New England Northeast area when hunting season comes, all your friends hunt, and if you don't have friends who don't hunt, everyone's gone. There's no one to hang out with, so you have a choice: make new friends, which I'm not terribly good at, or become a hunter, which, hey, get a gun or a bow and you go out there and sit in the woods, which I can do that. So I started hunting. And I've had a few good trips where we went up and organized hunts or drives or whatnot to a hunting camp my grandfather started that I now belong to. And some of my favorite memories of hunting are going up there and nobody shot a damn thing.
I can relate to that.
Close our asses off. No one saw a damn thing. And they were great, great trips. But I see, unfortunately, like you say, less of that culture. It kind of has been, I think it's been gone for a while, it almost seems like.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it was gone before us, and really just the political tides of, you know, PC and the organic movement, and, you know, how trophy hunting has just caught such a stigma in recent years. It's just killing it more. I mean, honestly, I don't think from any perspective that it's gone forever. I think what you're going to see here, and what a lot of people don't understand, is hunting's actually grown faster than it ever has right now in 30 years. And what you're going to see is all these people that are coming in because of this new perception of hunting and this way that we're showing hunting and saying, hey, you know, this isn't about high-fiving over a dead animal. This isn't about, you know, hanging those deer or elk outside of camp. This is about, you know, it's a rite of passage. It's about, you know, getting back to your roots. It's about being what I always say, morally responsible for your food source. What's going to happen probably 10 years from now is all these people that are brought in under this method are going to revert back to that camp lifestyle. They're going to revert back to that old thing, and they're going to try to revival culture. I mean, that's what we do. I mean, that will be hip in 10 years to say, hey, when was that culture when we hung those deer out in front of the camp or the elk? I mean, I don't think it's dead forever. I mean, it's just, it's a lull right now, and it's a lull for very important reasons. And I don't think that this movement is hurting us. I think all of this is some of the most important things we'll witness in our lifetime for hunting. And what it's going to do is, you know, there's 2% of the U.S. population that hunts today. You know, it's not like half the population of the U.S. is going to become hunters, but 4% might, and that's doubling how many we have right now. And that's a huge number to really think about that.
Yeah, that is a huge number. I mean, when you think about, I know I've heard old stories and read a few books about hunting in the Northeast, how, you know, the big thing on the weekend used to be drive up to the Adirondacks or the mountains, wherever you were going to hunt, and you drive back into these camps, all these men and sometimes women, and that was the big weekend thing to do, you know, come up from the city and spend the time up at camp, and you see the old pictures, and it was just, you know, hundreds of guys at these camps. Just,
yeah, it was amazing.
And actually, a little fact is, the first off-road kind of trucks ever created were created to get into deer camp. They were called doodle bugs, and they take off the regular tires and stuff from trucks and kind of jack them up and put on bigger tires just to get in on these logging roads and whatever else to get to deer camp.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, if it wasn't for deer camp, we wouldn't have jacked up trucks.
Well, I mean, I've certainly been up at my uncle's camp before where the old timers are like, if you don't get out now, you ain't making it to work. You know, it's funny up there. I mean, the weather moves quick. Not to say, I mean, I live in the Merrimack Valley in Massachusetts, and we have notoriously bad weather over here. And, you know, up there, though, you know, where you have roads that are unplowed. I mean, even though I'm a Tacoma fanatic, and Tacomas can get through just about anything, you know, there'll be moments when guys are like, if you don't leave camp now, you're not getting out of here for a week.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's the best, though.
Yeah. As long as you don't mind being unemployed on the other end of that.
No. You know, it's funny. We had Casey and Jordan Harbertson from Mountain Ops on. And they said something that I'll probably bring up almost every podcast now, and that is that the hunting industry is 3 to 5 years behind mainstream.
Oh, 100%. 100%. I mean, if you look at some of the biggest names right now in hunting, there are people that didn't, you know, it's so funny, they didn't come through the hunting industry. They came through other avenues. You know, look at Meat Eater. You know, he was not a hunting-driven media content. He was an outsider. He was a New Yorker. He came in from a different angle. You look at Donnie Vincent. Donnie Vincent is another phenomenal example of that. It's so funny of how many people in the industry behind closed door meetings that I'd be having about film production, everything else, the name Donnie Vincent would come up and people wouldn't know who it was. And these are people that are behind million-dollar companies, and they didn't know who Donnie Vincent was. And it's like, you're talking about a guy who got the front cover of, you know, major, you know, European hunting magazines, you know, Australian hunting magazines, a guy that's really changing the face of hunting altogether. And again, he was an outsider that's influenced in. And that's very important. That's what we try to do with everything of our content. We're trying to we're trying to not come at this from a hunter perspective, just like Hunter Green. We're trying to come at it from a different perspective and try to sell people on, and not even sell people, but show people something different. I mean, that was the whole thing behind my book, The Urban Deer Complex. I didn't want to be an urban hunter. That wasn't an option. Like, I didn't say, hey, listen, I want to hunt, 150 yards off of somebody's backyard where the kids play. And that was not in the cards. I mean, I didn't say this is what I wanted. I wanted to hunt Cape Buffalo in Africa. But reality is what it is. And, you know, there was no deer in Western Mass. There was nothing to hunt out there. And then all of a sudden, it took us by storm. All of a sudden, Eastern Massachusetts was full of deer. We still don't have as many deer as other parts of the country. But we could succeed now, and that really changed everything. And in the beginning of that book, I put the Teddy Roosevelt quote, do what you can with what you have where you are. And that's so important, because if somebody like me or many guys, we don't ask for suburban hunter. We didn't want it. This wasn't something that necessarily it's a product of the times, and I'm thankful for it. I truly am. But a lot of people miss that, like it's changing, and it's about outsiders. It's about different views, and urban hunting and suburban hunting is just so important, because what most people fail to remember is that people like us are on the front lines of hunting. I'm actually going to have contact with the people who have strong political power, who fund politicians, who have lots of money to blow on whatever they might have a bad mood about that day. We are on the front lines of people's perception of what hunting is, and suburban hunting is ultimately a driving force that's going to change hunting across this entire country, and it's already changing the culture.
If you could give your take, your vision on 5 years down the road, what would you want the, say, general population's perception of a hunter to be?
I mean, I think without a doubt, I feel like the general public certainly has a different view already. I think stronger than ever, it's going to have that local vore vision. It's going to have that idea of more responsibility for your food source. That's the idea of huntergreen.org. That was the idea of the film Original Red Meat. I didn't hire a middleman. I killed my own deer. I processed my own deer. I know where that meat came from field to plate. I know everything in between, and I was responsible for all of it. It's no different than gardening. It's really what it is. Actually, this year, I'm growing my first organic garden, which is so far going successful, but we'll see how that pans out.
So you're leading this political movement. You've written a book to start changing perception, or to get people thinking about urban hunting differently. What do you think is the most important message you could get across to, say, somebody who's like, you know what, I've been a vegetarian, but I'm kind of thinking I might like to get into hunting, which is actually a conversation I've had with someone.
It's very common now. It's unusual.
Surprising. It catches you off guard almost when you hear. I had a buddy. Yeah, we're at a bar. This is about a year ago, and it's getting towards hunting season. He says, I don't actually have anything against hunting. I have something against commercial farming. That's why I'm a vegetarian. And I was like, whoa, huh. Well, if there's one of you, there's got to be more like you, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's pretty accurate. I mean, recently we did an article with huntergreen.org called The Hypocrisy of Ricky Gervais's Anti-Hunting Crusade. And believe it or not, it crashed our web server God knows how many times, because we got over 500,000 views. Without a doubt, for any content that we've done with Dangerous Cow Publishing, the biggest thing. I've never received so much hate mail.
Got hate mail on that? I saw it because we're both members of the Facebook group Hunt, Gather, Cook.
Oh, yeah, they weren't too happy about that post, and I understand.
They didn't like it? Oh, that was the one they were talking about that was too political then?
Yeah, exactly. And I understand where they're at. I mean, that guy, first of all, I think his brand is unbelievable. Very talented.
Shaw, right? That's,
oh, yeah. He's very good at what he does. I understand where they were coming from as far as not having it, because it was politically motivated. It's a very potent subject. And really what we tried to get across on that is you know, obviously the message in it was that, okay, great, you're posing next to a bowl of tofu, which soybean happens to be the most destructive crop on earth. You know, it makes puts cattle farming to shame, really, in that scene. But really the underlying message was is that the miseducation on trophy hunting is huge, because there's just a stigma with that word trophy hunting. I have been a trophy hunter. I would be a liar to say that if next month when I put up my trail cameras, if I got a picture of a trophy buck that I thought was vulnerable, that I wouldn't go after him. I am a trophy hunter, but trophy hunting doesn't mean you don't eat the animal. And I don't know where that stigma's come from. And I understand it's primarily driven from this African hunting thing where, you know, a lot of people got a lot of backlash, whether it was Kendall Jones or something like that. But these animals were eaten. I mean, you know, it's so funny. We call them exotic animals. In Africa, they're not exotic. They call white-tailed deer exotic in Africa, you know. So eating white-tailed deer might be different to them. But the thing is they're eating, you know, elephant meat. They're eating lion meat. They're eating all of these animals. These animals aren't going to waste. And that's, again, one of those concepts that's just so over people's heads. They say trophy hunting. Like I've said before, is you don't condemn a prize gardener for trying to grow the biggest zucchini. Like that's really what it is, you know? Like, I mean, and this is what it gets down to. It's as long as they eat the zucchini, you know? Like, so if they grew the biggest zucchini and they killed it, what was the point? But the point is I might kill the biggest buck in my hunting woods. But that buck's still going to get eaten. It's still going to get processed into sausage. It's still going to be food on my plate. Nothing's going to go to waste. And that's just such a huge misconception with people.
I think, you know, there's two things you touched on I want to go a little deeper into, and that is, one, the misconception of trophy hunting, that the reason people are hunting trophies is to, you know, it's making up for, like, a small penis or something. You know what I mean? Like, it's making you macho to kill this big
deer,
when, in fact, it does have to do with the quality of the deer herd itself. You know, you want to take out the biggest, maturest, oldest animal, so the younger ones can come up. You don't want people out there killing fawns left and right. That's a terrible thing for the herd. But they hear trophy and they assume it's that's not what it is. It's only about the antlers. It has nothing to do with the quality of the herd or the ethics behind it. You know, I don't think they have any clue that hunters actually have ethics.
No. Culturally, there's this huge gap there. I mean, for guys like you and I or Phil that are hunters, you know, we're getting the biggest rack, and by default, you know, we eat the meat, you know?
Yeah.
No, it's the process, too, that gets us to that.
100%.
You know, the work that goes into it, the trail cameras, the scouting, the things that we know, that we experience, that people don't see, that, you know, yeah, being able to take the bigger buck or the bigger elk, like you said, it gets eaten. It gets, you know, I have a lot of family. I mean, an elk's a big animal. You know, when I get an elk, it's getting chunked up, and I'm giving a lot of it away. You know, just
so that some to me anytime you like.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that stigma of hack the head off, take a picture, and this is all I want is garbage. You know, that's I don't know a hunter that's done that. I really don't know.
I don't think that culture exists. I really don't.
No. But the education and you know, I haven't got to read your book, and I'm definitely interested in doing that. It's on my list. I've checked out some of your articles and in the video, and the one thing I'll say is, it's, you guys are very much facts based. I mean, that's what I like to see, because you're citing examples and you're citing facts, and it's like, this is an educated perspective. This is not, you know, redneck Joe Schmo hunter that sticks his gun out the side of the truck and shoots something and then wants to tell a story about it. It's not that, you know? So that's where, I don't know, man. Like I said, I'll let Will get back, but it, going into that perception, it's, we all know it does. It's not accurate. And what you guys have portrayed, what I've been able to see is, I like it, man. I'm really enjoying, you know, what the stuff that you guys have put out.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. I was fortunate that, so I didn't start hunting till, I don't even know how many years ago. I think it might have been 2011. And I took the, you know, hunter education courses that you have to take to become a licensed hunter in New York State, which I don't even know if people know. You actually have to go get a license to do this stuff, you know, and you get educated on it. And it's actually really great because you learn how important hunters are to the ecosystem and how much money hunters put in to taking care of the ecosystem and the animals and conservational efforts. You know, I think in your book, you came out, you listed the statistics in it, and I know that most, if not, you know, probably, and I don't know the percentage, so I'm not going to just start naming percentages, but I know it's a very, very large percentage, and I know hunters are the biggest contributors to taking care of the environment in New York State.
Yeah, the specific example we used in the book, and actually we had a very popular shirt from huntergreen.org called the Hunter Definition Shirt, and what it says was 97% of the funds essentially to preserve and maintain hunting lands came from hunting and fishing licenses, and that's accurate in Massachusetts. That's our statistic from Mass Wildlife. That's part of their revenue thing, and that's been a huge thing for us. Is one of the things we try to do is specifically with Hunter Green, and you know, Phil just mentioned it about mentioning facts. We did an article called Three Ways Hunting is Saving Africa. The irony of that article is that we went and took a non-hunting source and cited this non-hunting report about how much hunting actually had for a financial influence on Africa and how much it had done to save African wildlife. And all these anti-hunters attacked us like there was no tomorrow. And it was like, listen, we're citing a source that you're probably a member of this organization. Like, yeah. Like, why are you like we did this so you guys saw the neutrality of it and said, hey, wait a minute. Okay, maybe this is true. And a lot of these anti-hunters and what I get from, you know, emails and Facebook messages and everything else of this, you know, hate mail per se is, well, you guys have, biased, motivation. You want to save them just because you want to kill them. Well, okay, maybe it's a biased thing, but you know what? It's saving species, and hunters are saved species, you know, and it's so funny. I've had people say to me, oh, well, you know, in the 1900s, you know, animals were almost hunted to near extinction, and it took the Lacey Act to save, wildlife. And Lacey, Senator Lacey, was a conservationist. He put the Lacey Bill forward. He was the right-hand man of Teddy Roosevelt, the most famous hunter, in the U.S., and Lacey himself was a hunter. Hunters saved modern wildlife. It wasn't an anti-hunting group that put the Lacey Act forward. It wasn't an anti-hunting group that protected more wetlands than the U.S. government, like Ducks Unlimited. It wasn't anti-hunting groups that saved the wild turkey. It was the National Wild Turkey Federation after the U.S. government gave up on it. And it's just amazing to see the hate that's just driven by these, just emotions and passion. And truly, you've got to respect that passion, and you've got to understand, but people just don't open their eyes to the facts, and we're trying to do that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a campaign that I don't watch a lot of TV. I mean, I just don't. But I caught a commercial, and I don't remember what organization was it put on, but it was their whole theme was hug a hunter, you know, because they're the ones that are, saving, putting the money into saving and managing wildlife and this, you know, your outdoor, your open spaces and everything else. And I was like, you know what, it's probably another one of those ads that burns the anti-hunter's ass, because it's really the truth. It's once you get to the bare bones of it, you're right. Just like you said, AJ, it's, we are the ones looking out for the best interest of the outdoors and the wildlife, and the education you know, bringing that to light and the awareness to the anti-hunters is what they don't want to see. But it's that movement that I think is going to take that percentage from 2% to 3% to 4% eventually, with, you know, with the amount of hunters out there, is just that education.
It's, I heard Jim Shockey once say, if it wasn't for hunters giving value to those animals in Africa, by now most of them would be
100%. 100%. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But
no.
You know, I also heard the joke, what's the best way to, you know, save, say, an endangered species? We'll let people hunt it.
Yep.
I think that's Ted Nugent, actually, who said that.
Ted Nugent? Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that definitely sounds Ted Nugent-ish, and it's accurate. It's the truth. I mean, and there's nothing wrong with having that. I mean, you know, that alignment. It's no different than this trophy hunting talk. I mean, how many things in society are based on trophy agendas, whether it's running or, you know, weightlifting or baseball or football? I mean, our culture is infatuated with trophy, you know, trophy behavior, and hunting has just caught the stigma because at some point somebody thought that trophy meant that we didn't eat the animal. It's really what it gets down to. And it's just, you know, it's just about, it's about, you know, personal, you know, it's a personal quest, and that's where the image got. You know, when I go out in the woods and I try to shoot a bigger buck, I'd be a liar to say if there wasn't a point where I was trying to shoot the biggest buck around here, you know, and compete with other guys. But right now, where it is for me, it's an inner battle. It's trying to defeat myself. It's trying to one-up myself. And I'll tell you, you know, of all the Pope and Young class bucks I have in my wall, the smaller bucks of that group were far bigger achievements that no tape measure or anything else could give justice to. My biggest buck on that wall was the easiest of all my Pope and Young bucks. And he is, I don't want to say that he was an unsatisfying hunt, but I killed him on the first day of the hunt. I prepared 3 months to kill that buck and killed him on the first day of hunt. It's the first time it ever happened. I was like, what do I do now? You know, like I went for some of those bucks I hunted 2-3 years for, you know, like, and that culture is just created a stigma, and it's unfair because, culture in the United States is very trophy driven across the board.
I think people get upset because they have the image of the deer being Bambi, and they think hunters are objectifying it and simplifying them by calling them trophies. You know what I mean? It's like there's two. It's the same word, but there's really two separate meanings for it. You know, there's trophies like you hang on your wall, or you win at races, or you get at camp. And then there's a trophy animal, which represents the time, well, generally the time and effort. Not everyone's getting it on the first day, but generally all the time and effort and long life that deer has lived escaping all the other predators out there.
Yeah. Yeah. If it was more categorized as just a mature animal, right? This is the mature buck I took or the mature elk I took. People would probably perceive it differently because if they had even a little bit of education as to, like what you touched to before, Will, about, you know, wanting to take the more mature animal in a herd just for herd health, it's one of those things that, you know, that I think that would change the perception a little bit to people if it was just, you know, more addressed as it's a mature animal, because you're right, trophy's a bad word for it.
I think it's a tough thing for people to get past or over or against it, because it does that in their mind. It's an object. A trophy's an object. You know, if you haven't hunted, you don't know what it's like. And maybe this is more relative towards Northeast or whitetail hunters or anyone who's done it, to sit your ass in a stand day after day, night after night, just freezing till you can't feel your hands, waiting and hoping it will just come by.
Yep.
There's a lot that goes into it. People certainly just have so many poor perceptions of hunting. And then, you know, there's a lot more to it. And with Dangerous Cow Publishing, really our goal and our mission is to hit on all these, you know, media-driven sources that the mainstream industry ignored. The Urban Deer Complex, I know, you know, both of you guys have said you've been on the website. That entire website we've geared now towards suburban hunting. We're bringing in hunters that aren't me, to write about the subject, because there's so many people that have so much information on these things, and there's so many parts of this industry, and not even industry, culture that's unrepresented, and that's what we try to do. And actually, you know, Will, you had mentioned it first about getting into hunting back in 2011 and taking your hunter safety course and just kind of how much went into it. August 1st, Dangerous Cow Publishing is actually launching a new site called Basic Huntsman. And the entire website is geared towards people that have never hunted a day in their life. And it's the first time that we brought writers in from all over the country. We're still looking for people. So anybody, you know, looking into this, that wants to write for it. And we've done a mix of veteran hunters and a mix of people who are going out to hunt deer for their first time or hunt turkey for the first time and share their stories on that website and say, this is what I'm experiencing. And part of hunting culture, or whether it's gun clubs or deer camp or the Outdoor Channel, is a lot of this content either A, you know, people are intimidated by other people and say, hey, I don't want to ask this question because people are going to laugh at me, or B, people are just talking about such complex stuff that people have no idea what's going on. Urban Deer Complex is a prime example. I am, you know, obsessed with your behavior. I am borderline crazy about it. Well, I think I'm not borderline. I am crazy obsessive about it. And I talk about some crazy stuff. And there's a lot of crazy things I've done to try to figure out what I think I might know or may not know. And that stuff is over the heads of somebody who might just want to ask, what does a deer track look like? Who would get laughed out of a gun club for asking that question, or you know, just you're not going to find that North American whitetail. I mean, and this whole website is geared towards that. We brought guys in from I got Joe Allen coming in from Missouri. I got Jake Bennett, who's a local deer hunter. He's originally from upstate New York, actually. Does Shared Obsession TV. I don't know if you guys are familiar with that. I'm doing a lot of film content with him. He's the one guy that I'd say, if I was going to big buck hunt against in suburban America, he's not the guy I'd want to go against. Phenomenal big buck hunter, phenomenal deer hunter in general. I get the new online editor for Dangerous Cow Publishing, Kyle Potten, a 19-year-old kid out of New Jersey. Very successful, very good insights for his age. You know, how you think about hunting at 19 is different than how you think about hunting at 33. It's different than how you think about hunting at 60. You know, we just have a whole spread of people that are coming in. We have a guy from Georgia who's coming in, Matt Bell. I got a guy from West Virginia. I got a guy from, you know, I got another guy from Missouri coming in. There's just a whole mess of people that essentially what we want to do is be able to say to people, you can come here and you can learn about hunting. You're not going to get that stigma of mainstream Outdoor Channel, Sportsman Channel content. And I hate saying it, and I know some of my articles have been controversial lately, but where you're not going to get that conservative Christian white male. And that's what these people don't want. They don't want to hear about what you think about Barack Obama. They don't want to hear about what you think about religion. And they just don't care, because they're out there to hunt. That's what I'm out there to do. Like we can have different political beliefs. We can have different religious beliefs. You know, one of my biggest fans came out to New Jersey at a convention I did out there. And he was Islamic. Okay, great. you're trying to deer hunt. You know, that's what I'm not a priest. I'm not a politician. I'm none of those things. And that's, again, comes down to why we tried to separate huntergreen.org so far from everything else we do, because something like this Basic Huntsman site is specifically geared towards, we don't want to intimidate people. We want to make people feel welcome. We want to make people be able to ask any questions. And we want to say to people, listen, this isn't easy. You know, you need to go through these processes, and we're okay with holding your hand to get through there, because I'll tell you right now, for what we've done so far with Dangerous Cow Publishing, I mean, we launched the book back in June of 2014, so we're 1 year this month. We outsold major publication companies, and what we did is made sure that we could reach across the lines and make people feel welcome and say to people, this is all new. There's no right or wrong answer. And you know, I think a lot of people And when I first launched the book, I had it more than now. I had a lot of people come at me and say, oh, what makes you an authority? You know, what makes you the expert on suburban deer hunting? I'm not the expert per se. What I've done is open the discussion. And by opening the discussion, we learn. And when we debate subjects, when we debate animal behavior, when we debate why that deer doesn't mind somebody mowing their lawn in their backyard, but minds you being in a tree stand 150 yards away, like, those are the things that by debating them, we've learned. And that's what I did. I opened that discussion. That's what I wanted to do. And that's why going forward, like stuff like Basic Huntsman or the Urban Deer Complex, we're bringing on so many new people, right, to say this is a different perspective. You know, like, this might have worked for me. Maybe it doesn't work for somebody else.
I experience a lot of what you're talking about there. From my pro shop, when I deal with new customers, I mean, I've got in our old shop, of course, I'm in transition to our new shop, but on our old truck, we had some mounts on the wall and some animal heads, and you get the soccer mom and dad that come in the doors for their kids learning archery in an intro class, and they're looking at the animals, and they're like, well, are those real? You know, and so it's educating those people that, you know, that they become very interested once they see, you know, the avenue of archery, for example, at my shop. And it's teaching them from point A, don't be embarrassed. They're not stupid questions. Let me hold your hand and show you how to get to point B. I'm really looking forward to seeing that. That's very interesting. You guys are doing that. I'm also very interested in the book you wrote. I mean, I've talked to Will. I've got some writing I've done myself that I'm trying to put into book format and get something going.
Tadros Co. Publishing is your source.
Yeah, no, man, I'm going to have to talk to you
more.
We're
all about publishing books.
You also a writer out of Colorado for your website?
Yeah.
Who may own the biggest archery shop in Colorado and be the current trained hunt national champion?
Yes,
I'll volunteer, Phil.
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. So how long did it take you to put that book together?
You know, this is actually kind of funny because there's actually a second book coming out, and we've kind of sat on the content, and it took me 5 years to write that. Well, 5 to 6 years. It's really debatable. The first one's the difficult one. I wrote the second book in under a year. And the second book is not a how-to book per se. I mean, there's people that debate whether my first book was a how-to book, but I think it was. I mean, it was very informationally driven in the sense that I'm obsessed with deer behavior. I think the specific section, the mind of the whitetail, is the most important section of that book. I thought the mind of the hunter, which was the first section, was necessary. I think it was a little redundant for some people, and I also think that the third section, mind of Mother Nature, was a little redundant for people. But that second section, mind of the whitetail, was just so important because that's what it was, is the idea that I believe that biology is not the driving force in hunting in suburban America. It's psychology. Psychology kills your deer, not biology. It's two very fundamentally different sciences. And as a culture, we've very much focused on biology. But the second book is a novel driven book, and it's called, and it's actually part of a series. It's called Whitetail Confidential. And the subtitle of the book is The Legend of the White Whale. And it's about a 6-year hunt that I hunted this buck. I called the White Whale in Massachusetts. And in the process of hunting that buck, I killed 5 Pope and Young bucks. And I have many close encounters with this white whale. And it leads up to, you know, my final point of the white whale. And it's a very inside look at, you know, my thought process. It's about the obsessive behavior. It's essentially like you could compare it to a drug addict talking about his addiction. I'm talking very specifically about how I was willing to sacrifice a marriage for it. I was willing to sacrifice jobs for it. I was willing to destroy everything to kill this buck. And what went into it. And there was a little, we put the book to the side for a while and almost didn't publish it because of that trophy stigma. And we said, you know what, maybe we shouldn't let this book go out. And what we did is we did the whole first section of the book is the Whitetail Confidential part. And what it is these stories about how I failed as a hunter. And if you actually go on the urbandeercomplex.com, there's actually two articles on there, part of the Whitetail Confidential series that are actually in the book. And it's a series of articles about just these, you know, absolute failures as a hunter. And that's how you learn. By failing, you learn to hunt. And that's in writing the second book, it was boom. It came out like that. But more importantly, going forward with Dangerous Cow Publishing is we're publishing books that aren't by me, which, you know, what we did is when I created Dangerous Cow Publishing, we had contact from publishing companies. I had a chance to publish with people, but I didn't feel like anybody could offer me anything I couldn't offer myself. And in fact, I felt like I could offer myself more. And it turned out to be true. I mean, we went from nobody to the number two deer hunting book on Amazon. We got accepted by Barnes & Nobles, and the only reason why we didn't sell on there is because we refused to work with the distributors, because it's that fight against corporate America. I mean, I was a punk rock kid growing up. It's kind of a general theme, but so we have a number of books that are coming out now that are essentially driven by people that are you know, have different outlooks. Our big project after Whitetail Confidential, and Whitetail Confidential is going to be more than just this book. There's going to be a film associated with it from Jake Bennett, who's if you want to talk about impressive film from the Northeast, this guy has killed some beautiful Pope and Young bucks in Massachusetts, some great bucks in upstate New York on film. And we've been sitting on this film content for 5-6 years. And recently we just started discussions about, you know, potentially – you know, bringing some of this film footage back and saying, you know, let's do a Whitetail Confidential, like a your story of your obsession on a specific buck. And that's the whole theory of the Whitetail Confidential brand. And after the first of the year, we'll actually launch a book on turkey hunting, which, again, we're known for doing something that's different than everybody else. This entire book is about aggressive turkey hunting tactics and turkey traditionalists hate guys like us. And the thing is we grew up as trophy buck hunters, and I wouldn't say we grew up with it, but that's what we did. And you do anything for a big buck, you know. And when it came to the springtime and turkey season, I'm not sitting in a ground blind for 4 hours to shoot a turkey. I already did that during deer season to shoot a, you know, 140-inch buck. Like, I'm going to get out there. I'm going to get aggressive. It's my chance to let loose. And a lot of guys look down on those tactics, and a lot of people are scared to talk about them because the mainstream, you know, company doesn't. And, you know, a lot of these mainstream companies don't want to talk about it. And that's what we're going to do. And the name of the book is actually called The Seduction of Tom, which is a very a very entertaining subject. And yeah, this book is specifically going to it's Jake Bennett. I turkey hunted with Jake Bennett this past year. I've turkey hunted with Jake Bennett plenty of times, but we went into this year specifically to film the number two, you know, the second huntergreen.org film called The Carbon Wingprint, which is a turkey hunting film. We filmed Boston Bruins player Brad Marchand turkey hunting with his father. It was a great experience. Jake and I ended up killing 12 birds, and he did it with one mouth call and one pot call. The only thing we used was a Reapin decoy that him and I made, and we never used a ground blind or anything else. And we went out, and 11 of these birds we killed on film. And at the end of the film, the irony of huntergreen.org is we don't show kills on film. It's just because we think the content's more important. Now we're sitting on 11 turkey kills. Yeah. And a lot of it, we went into it and we're like, well, I guess we need to produce a turkey hunting film now, you know? But it, again, we spent a lot of time doing photography work for the book, for The Seduction of Tom, and all these very aggressive tactics. I mean, we tagged out in, you know, Jake tagged out in New York, Massachusetts, and New Hampshire. I tagged out in Massachusetts and New Hampshire. It was just a great season. And that's the kind of content that we want to keep delivering is stuff that maybe people don't want to talk about, like aggressive turkey tactics, because it's considered, you know, a stigma in that industry. And for us, you know, for me as an urban hunter, this is the reality of it. Why am I going to ignore that? Why are any of us going to ignore it? This is what we're really doing. I'm going to write about that. The guys next to me want to write about it. Like, let's push forward with that kind of stuff, you know?
No, that's, like you said, I mean, we'll actually
introduced some of your work to me. I'd never heard about it. You know, of course, I'm out here in the mountain states, and it's and not that it's, you know, of course, with the today's day and age of technology and social media, I hadn't connected with your work. So when he put some stuff in front of me, he's like, check this out, you know, check this out. And I started looking into, like I said, mainly some of the articles and the video you guys put out. But man, I just to hear everything you guys you're working on, I'm excited to see more. I really am.
We have a lot coming up. We're sitting on some other content. Another gentleman by the name of Sean Callanan. He's actually a 3-time traditional IBO champion, and he's a critical brain injury just survivor. He actually got hit by a car in a rest stop doing 60 miles an hour while he was walking out of his car and survived. Went on to actually win another IBO championship. You know, forgive me if the statistics are off, whether it's 6 months after he walked out of the hospital, whatever else. Hands down, the best archer I know. And outlook on life, completely different than anybody else. If you survive death, that's just the way it is. And yeah. He's an engineer, and his archery technicality is phenomenal. Mm-hmm. We actually have a series coming out from him, a film series called Origins, which is all traditional archery. And that's the whole basis of Origins. We're going back to our roots. We actually even have an ice fishing film coming out by him. That we did, and we're really just trying to, you know, just cover these contents. Specifically, a lot of our content is New England driven, and it's because, you know, the majority of us involved in this company are from New England, and New England is so underrepresented, the Northeast in general, even New York, is so underrepresented.
Yeah, if you're willing to travel to upstate New York.
100%. Well, Jake is from up there. I mean, I don't know exactly where, but he spends so much time up there, and I'll tell you, if you look at the film footage that Jake's filmed, self-filmed shooting bucks in Massachusetts are 160-plus inches. You're like, what? How did you self-film this? Yeah. First of all, how did you find a buck that big? Second of all, like what? And that's what we look for. We want that different look. We want that different view. And you know what? There's a lot of talent in the Northeast that's just being you know, we were actually supposed to make a film with Lane Benoit, who I don't know if either of you guys are familiar. Lane was passed away this past year, which was very shocking and unfortunate. And we were going to make a film about the Benoits called The Legend of the Benoits, Tracker. It was going to be Tracker, subtitled The Legend of Benoits. And he's no longer with us. And there's still guys like you got Hal Blood out of Maine. Hal Blood is this, you know, Northwoods, New England guy who can, you know, moose hunt and run deer down like nobody else. And just because of the media driven content, because for our now generation, things need to look pretty. They need to be presented right. You know, you can have the best product in the world, and if you don't package it right, nobody's going to buy it. You can have the worst product in the world, and if you package it good, everybody's going to buy it. And that's a big thing with Dangerous Cow. We're all about presentation because that's how we get through to people, you know?
So your films and the stuff you're going to come out with is going to be similar to the video you already have out. You know, I would say it's that Donnie Vincent-esque feel.
Yeah, it's very artistically film-driven.
All right, that's I like that. I'm a big fan of that. So
specifically, for any of you guys that don't know, huntervids.com, great website to check out. And I'm sure the owner of HunterVids.com is going to fall over in his chair when I say this because it's unannounced right now. But they're about to announce the Advent Film Tour. We have two films that are appearing in the Advent Film Tour. One is Searching, a New England Hunting Tale, which is I filmed grouse hunting up in Arrill. And it's a story specifically about the dying camp culture of northern New England. And I bird hunt as the backdrop. And for the record, I'm the worst bird hunter. Recently, I was buying a new shotgun up in Kittery Trading Post in Maine. And it's a Franke over and under. And I traded in my Stoger side-by-side, which is like, first of all, I weigh about 160 pounds soaking wet. So swinging a 12-gauge Stoger is like swinging a friggin' Panzer tank. It just doesn't work. I'm in trading this gun, and the people at Kittery are always great with everything up there. And the guy stops me for a second, and I'm going through asking all these questions about this Franke shotgun. He says, "Wait a minute, did you just say you're bad at bird hunting?" And I go, "Yeah." I said, "Well, I said, listen, I can find partridge. I can find rough grouse. I just can't shoot them.
and the guy shooting.
Yeah, and the guy laughed and he said, aren't you AJ DeRosa, the famous deer hunter? And I was like, the key to that statement was famous deer hunter. I went bird hunting because I'm bad at it. And fundamentally at the core of the searching film is what it's saying is I'm searching for something different than deer hunting. You know, I'm out there soul searching. And what drives us back as humans is failure. You know, you want to keep going back to something because you fail at it. And for grouse hunting, for me, I just kept going back. I couldn't get beat up enough, you know, like I couldn't go back there and, you know, fail enough. Our second film in that film tour is the second Hunter Green film called Carbon Wingprint. Carbon Wingprint is specifically about the carbon emissions produced in corporate turkey farming in comparison to the carbon emissions produced by a turkey hunter. It's a very strange take, very liberal. I understand that. I know a lot of people think it's very strange. And on top of that, we talk about what the National Wild Turkey Federation has done to secure the future of the turkey, how they've essentially almost single-handedly made it so we can hunt turkey today. And that whole film is driven up. If, you know, more films coming out of the course of the year, but those are our two first really big films that will launch between, essentially you'll see those trailers go up sometime at the end of July. And then you'll see the actual films launch in the Advent Film Tour come September to October area. And these are, you know, everything in that film festival is that artistic film. It's that idea of telling a different story. You know, Fred Bear, you know, always said the anticlimax of the hunt is the kill. What anybody tries to show, a guy like Donnie Vincent, you know, Sikmata Films, very, you know, talented production company. There's a lot of different people that are producing media content. That's what it's driven on. And as an industry, we've really messed up in the sense that you get the Outdoor Channel that's driven on people that are celebrities. And what they have is a million talented guys behind the scenes that are finding deer for them and then calling them up and saying, hey, we got this buck. He's showing up regular. Come kill him on film. That ruined our industry. And this is about showing that other side of the industry, showing about the guy that wants to do it from start to finish, the guy that's or woman for that matter, that's going, you know, from A to Z, not from, you know, oh, just call me up when Z gets here. That culture's dead. It's dying today. And, you know, combine that with the fact that, you know, we can all debate whether cable TV will be dead in 5 years because of recent politics. It's going to change hunting, you know, and it's going to change everything that we know about our sport. And we really want to be a part of that. And we want to deliver that message. And more importantly than anything, and what I think a lot of people kind of miscomprehended from the Urban Deer Complex, is we want to invite people to get involved. This isn't about me just writing a book. This is about other people telling the story. This is about other people with talent, other people coming forward and saying, this is the way I look at it, or this is you know, there's stories out there, and that's what we want, the stories. It's not about the biggest buck, it's about the story.
You got something, Phil?
No, go ahead, man.
Oh, you look like you're going to say something. I think it's really, I couldn't agree more with your assessment of what your current hunting television is and where I hope it goes. I don't know if you got a chance to watch, you know, if you're like me and you don't watch much hunting television, I actually did watch our buddy Trevin Stoltzfus, who's from Outback Outdoors, came out with, it was more of a film, but it was shown on television, but it really had a film vibe to it, and it was called The Ibex.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with his work. He's very good producer.
Yeah, and you know what? He killed that. And it wasn't this trophy shot, you know, it had a story, it was artfully done, and I was just so happy to see that from a friend of mine. That, yeah. And talking to him, he, you know, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, but it sounded like Trevin couldn't agree more with where this industry should go, and it's in that direction.
No, I agree. Yeah, it was a breath of fresh air, I guess, you know, from the typical grip and grins and what's out. And that's like I said again, I don't watch a lot of TV for the same reason. I enjoyed watching that film that he put out. And, you know, even the very first time I saw Donnie Vincent's work, too, it was the same way. I was like, wow, you know, this is just it was worth it. It was worth my time. And there's so much on TV that isn't worth anybody's time.
Yeah, that's honestly, you know, one of the only people right now, in my opinion, that's producing on mainstream television that's worth anybody's time is Jim Shockey. And my understanding, and I could be wrong, you know, and this is hearsay, is that Brandon Shockey, his son, is really the driving force behind that. That Brandon Shockey, and again, I could be wrong, it's my understanding he came from a National Geographic background. He came back and said, this is the way we should be doing this, and they created really these adventure films, you know, like Donnie Vincent. I mean, Donnie Vincent, at the end of the day, is the originator of this. And, anybody to give credit to anybody else. I mean, whether people did it before or not, who knows, but he's the one to break through with it. The Rivers Divide was a great film. That was the first film to really make it. They did a lot differently from The Rivers Divide to their next film, which really hit the nail on the head, because it was just, that's it. It's a story. It's a story. And that's what we all missed. We went for kill sequences. We went for bloodshed. We went for trophy this. We went for, I'm from Massachusetts. If I see a 170-inch buck in my lifetime, it's a miracle, which I have. And it was a miracle. And I didn't kill it. You know, but that, you know, there's no reality in that. There's no real reality in anything. Actually, a film that we're gearing up to produce this fall with Jake Bennett is called Provider. And Jake Bennett has 3 kids. He's a nurse. He works a ton of hours. Him and his wife are constantly tied down between kids, you know, working, whatever it is. And this whole film is the story of Provider. It's that idea that I'm going out, I'm providing for my family. This hunt, this meat, this everything is a balance of so many aspects other than just killing a trophy animal or any animal for that matter. It's not a hobby. It's a lifestyle.
That sounds like an awesome concept. And, you know, what kind of blows my mind about, say, the Donnie Vincent thing or the Jim Shockey thing is, and I think he has said it, it's a lot of Brandlin's directions they're taking, is it comes back to the hunting industry is just so far behind everybody else. You know, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie or film 180 Degrees South. No. Which is it's more of a climbing film, but it follows the footsteps of Yvonne Chouinard and Doug Tompkins, who were Yvonne was one of the first guys of a group of guys to climb El Capitan in Yellowstone, and they go on this quest to go climb Mount Fitzroy down in Patagonia, and it's this guy retracing his steps and how he goes about it and the things that happen on the way, and they give, you know, the history of the climb and all that. But the way it's shot is very similar to a lot of ski films you see now, or mountain biking films, or even kayaking films. And it's like, what took hunting so long to do this more artistically beautiful, story-driven filming? It's like the concept isn't anything new. Just somebody like Donnie or Brandlin had to come along and say, why don't we just do this, what they're doing? It looks really great, and people seem to – like this Discovery Channel's Planet Earth.
Yep.
You know, that's,
I mean, it's, you got to understand, it's a lot of technology driven. The technology wasn't there 5 years ago. The technology, like DSLR technology, has changed so much. I mean, so much of what you're seeing from guys like Donnie Vincent, Jim Shockey, it's all filmed on DSLR. Everything we're filming is on DSLR. I have a tough time not releasing our film work, because anything anybody has seen from our film work, what we have coming up just blows it out of the water, because the technology is just so new. We were able to get so much new stuff. I mean, honestly, a lot of people think I made a lot of money off my book. I blew it all on videography equipment, bro.
saving nothing.
Yeah, we literally saved nothing from it. We blew it all on videography equipment to produce films, because You know, and the other thing is short films. We have a short attention span in the modern generation. We don't want to sit there for 30 minutes and watch all of these things. We want to sit there for 5 and be done with it. And there's nothing wrong with that, because 30 minutes in a lot of cases is watering content down. And that's where it's going. It's technology. It's understanding that we're an informationally driven society now. You know, we want everything quickly. We all these things just boom, boom, boom. And you get it all in a row. I mean, you have the advancement of the GoPro. You know, you have just all these, you know, crazy technologies that come out. And it's making it possible for us to do this now, to tell better stories. And it allows the market to open up, because it doesn't cost $100,000 to $200,000 or $500,000 in film equipment. You can do it for $5,000, $10,000 or whatever else to get geared up with quality equipment and go out there and make a film and learn the skills. And, you know, I always joke, I have a master's degree in YouTube and a bachelor's degree in Vimeo. You can learn anything on YouTube and Vimeo. If I go into a film and I say, hey, I saw this on some film I watched, I want to edit like that, you just Google it. Next thing you know, you learn how to do it. And what a lot of us are doing are looking for inspiration outside of hunting. I spent hours on Vimeo looking at other film producers who aren't in hunting and look at the way they film things, the way they're producing things, the way they're editing things, to say, this is what we want to do. This is how we want to tell the story. This is making our story. And it's you know, the cinematic experience. A lot of people might maybe view it as not being that raw, real deal, but what it is it's a poet's rendition on camera. You know, as a writer, that's so important. If it wasn't for editors, if you guys saw my grammar in real life, it's the worst thing ever. So if it wasn't for editors, I couldn't be the writer I am. And it's the same thing with film. If it wasn't for the film equipment, we couldn't tell the story we wanted to. And that's really what's doing a lot for all of us.
I mean, let's be honest, though. I could go get, you know, two video cameras from the early 1990s, give one to Donnie Vincent and one from, say, a popular star on the Outdoor Channel, and they're going to come to us with two very,
very different. Yeah, and that's in anything. I mean, we all have different, you know, outtakes. We have different, you know, visions on what things might be or what not be. But the fact is that the technology is here today for more people to get on the playing board, more people to experience these things, more people to tell the stories. And it's making it more competitive. And, you know, for any capitalists out there, competition drives growth. So, that's what it is. I mean, if you spend some time on huntervids.com, it would just blow your mind, some of the content. And you know, it's so funny. I have a lot of private discussions with the owner. And he'll hit me up and be like, dude, you got to watch this film. And I am notoriously into films that are not made by hunting production companies, companies that are hired specifically to do one film, who've never hunted a day in their life, and produce this film. And I'm like, oh, my God, this is the best film I've ever watched. You know, and that's the perspective that you got to, as hunters, as people, we need to back our way up, relook into it and say, how can we tell the story differently? How can we deliver the true message? How can we reach out to people? And one thing that we've never done, and as anybody, is you've never tried to tell that story to non-hunters. And not just us or huntergreen.org. Or we're not the only companies trying to do that. Somebody like Donnie Vincent, Sigmanta Films, which is the production company, and forgive me for not remembering the specific guy who's behind Sigmanta Films, because my understanding, he's really the brains behind that operation. Mm-hmm. He has a very specific vision, and that vision is to show adventure to people who are not hunters. And that's what's driven that content. Just like a guy like Brandon Shockey, who, you know, wants to show that story differently. You know, his father was a very respected person in the industry. He's always been a very neutral source in the industry. And he came in and delivered his father to a whole new level. Their new series are impressive for network television. I think they could be better. And I'm sure that behind the scenes, Brandlin can crush it, you know, even further than what he's done. But network television still requires something, you know. And they've done the impossible. So many of these guys have, you know.
What do you think is – do you think there's a chance of the Outdoor Channel having more of that on?
You know, it's funny. I just got off the phone with the owner of Hunter Hits the other night, and we specifically talked about this. I think if they don't change, then they're going to fail. I think even if they do change, they might still fail. And that has to do with the fact that cable television is ending. When Netflix produces, award-winning film series, that changes it. It's funny. I was in meetings recently with some major brands, and I won't mention them because I do have a bit of reputation for not working well with sponsors.
How do you get that reputation?
I've walked out on some very big sponsors before and been pretty vicious about not representing people because.
Want to give some names?
No. Sure. I just
things up.
No. There's a reason why I only work with very specific companies. I mean, a lot of people have recently with my article Super Hunter Syndrome, which was specifically about the fact that the hunting industry was painting this image that you needed all this gear to be a successful hunter. Some people try to throw back in my face, well, here's pictures of you wearing Kuyu gear all the time, and how is that any different? And I understand where people come from saying that, but Kuyu has a very specific vision, and I like to say that they're not profit-driven. I like to say Dangerous Cow Publishing is not profit-driven because I'm broke. But
in that case, this podcast is not profit-driven either.
So we all understand we're trying to deliver real, relevant information. Kuyu's been very successful, and honestly, I think the core of their success has been they view things as the hunt's bigger than them. You know, that they truly want to produce the best gear in the market. And yes, the gear is expensive. Yes, it's everything else. The only reason why I work with them, not the only reason, A, I have to believe in a piece of gear. And B, I'm not going to say brought to you by Kuyu. I'm not going to say it every 5 minutes, hey, so you know Kuyu did this. Kuyu, all they asked from us was to be an affiliate. And that's their big thing, is they wanted their gear shown in film work that was artistically driven. They specifically were interested in huntergreen.org, which is a very politically driven content. And their thing was, this is different. This is something unusual. We just want to see our gear in it. And guys like Jason, who owns Kuyu, are obsessive in a very specific technicality. And what I always try to tell people is, people ask me about archery, and I'm a diehard bow hunter. I am not the worst gun hunter, but I'm not a good gun hunter. I'm not a professional archer. The pro shop that I go to, up in Seabrook, New Hampshire, these guys, their lives are archery tuning. They understand how to put a rest on a bow. I don't know. I kill deer. That's my thing. I have hired you to show me how my bow should be set up, how to do something, and that is so often missed in the industry that people are hired for very specific things. I trust Kuyu to make the best gear I could possibly have because Jason is crazy obsessive about what he's doing. I don't know what's going on with this hat, but I know it works. and that comes with a lot of gear that they make, and that's anything in this industry. I can't teach you how to be the world's best archer, but I can tell you how to be a better bow hunter. And those are two different things. And that's how I feel about the whole industry. I mean, recently we got involved in a contract with Maven, who's an optic company. And again, Maven is very specifically driven on that idea of they just want to be shown. They want to be exposed. They're not asking anybody to say, brought to you by Maven. Maven made you. This is the false sense of security. I've killed big bucks with hand-me-downs, the worst gear, 3-year-old bows, arrows that had already been blown through 6 different deer. And it didn't matter because at the end of the day, like I wrote in that article, Super Hunter Syndrome, woodsmanship is going to kill you more deer than anything else you can do. That's where the skill is. This type of stuff, this gear or whatever else, it's a personal thing. It's like whether you drive a Toyota, Ford, whatever else. I'm a Tacoma guy. You might be a Ranger guy. Who knows? That's what it gets down to. And a lot of these sponsors that ruin the industry in the sense that they really want to put it out there and say, Okay. Let's tell these people that the only reason you killed this turkey is because you used this double bull blind, or because you used this specific decoy, or because you used this turkey call, or anything else. Honestly, when it comes to turkey calls, if you know how to use a turkey call, you're going to kill birds. And I'll tell you, I am not a good turkey caller, and I kill turkeys with turkey calls. And that's woodsmanship. That's understanding, getting aggressive, adapting to the situation, and that's woodsmanship. Woodsmanship is rapid adaptation, and that's what the book The Urban Deer Complex is about. It's about rapid adaptation. It's about looking at a situation, being able to adapt how you interpret that situation, and being able to successfully put it in your advantage. And that's what, you know, all these, and so many companies have ruined it for the industry to say we have the best bow, we have the fastest bow, we have the most shootable bow, we have most of these things. I mean, so many, you know how many guys have asked me, how come you never said in the Urban Deer Complex what bow you were shooting? And it's so funny because it's just like, what does that matter? Like, can you shoot your bow straight? And it's funny. It's because I shot, and this is the truth, because I know this is a good deal breaker, and you know, for the podcast, this is a good like information thing. I shot Bowtech through the entire book. I think it's an
run out by Bowtech. Everybody, you'll shoot deer just like AJ DeRosa.
And I am not sponsored by Bowtech. I shoot an Elite now. I'm not sponsored by Elite. I did talk to Elite. It didn't work out. But I shoot an Elite because you know what they were? It shoots straight. It took me a while to get used to shooting an Elite, because if you shoot a Bowtech, anybody who shoots Bowtech out there, they're a hard cam bow. I was trying to rip the string off of that bow every time I shot it. And I shot great with it. Killed deer out to 40 yards. When I went to Elite, when I was in my pro shop, and here I am an alleged trophy hunter, I'm trying to rip the string off of this Elite bow. And the pro shop, Paradise Archery up in Seabrook, the guy's looking at me going, you need to calm down and stop trying to pull the string off of the bow. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He goes, you've been shooting Bowtech too long. And I have nothing bad to say about Bowtech. But I switched to this, Elite. It took me probably 2 months to break ripping that string off that bow. And finally I stopped. And I can sink arrow at 40 yards like it's nothing. And I went down 10 pounds. I'm shooting 60 pounds. I was shooting 70 before. So it's just a whole new world. But that's it. It's all about, if you can use the gear you have, it doesn't matter. You know, just get good with what you have. You know, woodsmanship's going to kill you deer. You know, or turkeys, or you know, I'm sure elk for that matter. Not that I have no experience in shooting elk, but you know, that's what it's about. It's and that's, again, the Basic Huntsman website. That's what we want to teach. We want to teach woodsmanship. And actually, the funny thing going into that website is we refuse to bring on sponsors that are specifically driven by brands that make clothing or bows or arrows. The only sponsors we're bringing onto the website are informationally driven companies. For instance, like Huntervitz, who's putting films forward, or the Urban Deer Complex that specifically talks about, you know, a type of hunting. That's what we want to drive. Informational content, education. Education is what makes all of us succeed, you know?
I do. And I, two of the most important quotes or saying I've picked up in while hunting are one's from my coach, and that is, the best bow you can shoot is the one you have.
Yep.
And the other one is from Kenton, the founder of Train to Hunt, and that is, the most important piece of equipment you have is you.
Yeah, that's Sean Callanan, who I mentioned earlier in the film. Fascinating guy. A lot of guys, I feel like, have a tough time getting along with him because he's bold. He's very confident. I mean, if you get hit by a car and live and you're supposed to die, I feel like there's a certain level of boldness that has to come out of that. He wrote an article, and we haven't released it yet, called Don't Diet. And what he said was that I go out, and he said, and you do it with deer hunting. He said, I live a lifestyle. Dieting is a start and end point. Lifestyles, you know, just go forever. He wakes up in the morning every morning and shoots his bow before he goes to work. He's a teacher. He's the department head of engineering at a local vocational school. And this is his thing, is don't diet. Live the lifestyle. Like, be part. If you want a goal, if you feel something about it, like, be it, you know? And that's so important to think that, like, you know, whether it's eating, I eat all organic. It's the same thing. Organic is not a diet to me. It's a lifestyle. And that's really what he pushes forward in this article. And that's it's basic psychology. It's just a mindset to say, okay, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And when any guys ask me, you know, how are you successful as a big buck hunter? And I get a lot of emails and stuff about this. Like, well, what made you? It's a commitment. That's what it was. What I lived was big buck hunting. I went out to kill Pope and Young Bucks. I lived to kill Pope and Young Bucks. Every morning, I obsessed over finding one, narrowing them down, making a list. It was 365 days a year. It wasn't a start to end thing. It wasn't a dieting process. It was the lifestyle.
I think Phil could probably delve a little further into that, maybe about, you know, with his schedule and everything, that you're not what you say you do, you are what you repeatedly do. And I know Phil is that type of guy who it's all there, laid out, boom, 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 each step, you know, every day, same thing. You know, he's not saying he wants to be the train to hunt champion or a great shooter or, you know, have the best pro shop around. He is doing everything he can every day to move that goal continuously forward.
Yep.
Yeah, and, you know, I think that that's kind of what, you know, touching back, I started writing a bunch of articles, and I've got my own blog site that it's kind of instructional and teaching for bow hunting stuff. And starting to put some of those articles together, and I thought about it, well, I'm going to put it in book format and try to teach, because when I started out, it was the same thing. It's like, well, you can pick up a magazine, but that's media, that's marketing. You can watch it. TV show, but that's fake. Or a lot of it was fake. It was recreates, and it just wasn't good. And when I see the customers that are across the counter from me at the pro shop, and they're truly wanting to know, what does it take to be better? Show me the steps. You know, there's so many people out there on social media and everything else with the camera doing the selfie, and you know, when I'm in the gym or when I, and it's like, you know, that's not what's going to get you better. You know, it's, so that's where when I started. Had this idea. Well, you know, I've got these articles that I have written. I hadn't released any of them. I was like, you know, I can put this in a format as a more of a how-to. You want to get better. The top 10% of bow hunters, you know, that allegedly killed 90% of the animals. You heard that saying before.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, what does it take to become one of those top 10%ers? Well, let me show you what my opinion of that is. Right. So that's kind of what I've been putting together. As more of a somewhat of a how-to, but some experience that I've taken into it, because, like Will said, I work two jobs. I mean, I get up every morning at, you know, 5:30 or so, work out. I've got my demo business, our family business, and I got the pro shop in the evening. And then, you know, I spent 6 years kind of shooting competitive archery, kind of climbing through the ranks and earning my way into the pro class, not because I had 3 or 4 hours a day to practice, but because my half an hour to 45 minutes or an hour was very structured, and there was no time wasted. And so I guess I've learned a lot of things the hard way, but I've learned things that there's always time. There's always a better way. And let's get out there and let's teach this new generation of hunter, or let's teach this non-hunter that's now inquiring about maybe, you know, wanting to recover their own meat and handle their own and know where it comes from. Well, let's get out there and let's all share in this movement and continue to teach, because at the end of the day, that's I want my boys. I've got two. I want them to be able to pick up a book that I've written or an article that I've written or a podcast that we've done and learn something, because I think that the generation of let's play video games, you know, or let's watch TV, man, it drives me nuts. And so with what you guys have going on over there, and you know, like Will said, you know, guys like Will and myself, I know Will gets up at 4:30 in the morning and he's cranking, you know. So it's guys
I'm
like
going
us
to bed
that,
at 4:30.
Yeah, it's guys like that I just think this I say awareness. It's all about awareness, and it's about teaching. Yep. And
education.
So that's it. And it may not be that anybody's an expert in any one area, but if you know a little bit about something that you can teach somebody about it and make them better, well, let's do it. And
the discussion is so important.
Yeah, that's right. Like you said in your book, it's about getting that discussion started to, you know, just get people interacting. And I don't know, man. I mean, I'm excited to see your guys' stuff. I don't want to cut it off, but let's recap. And you've got a lot of projects coming up. Give us some timeline as far as, I know you said some of the film tour, it's like a film tour that's where your films are coming out.
Yeah, so the Advent Film Tour, which is huntervids.com, phenomenal website. They're primarily known for giving these artistic films that a lot of us have been inspired by. I've worked closely with them for some time now. I believe there's 11 films that are released in the Advent Film Tour. It's going to be an on-demand film tour, as well as there's going to be on-site. My understanding is it's going to be shown at the convention in Nashville for the National Wild Turkey Federation Convention. There's a few other places that it'll be shown at. We're talking about potentially doing a showing up at Kittery Trading Post in Maine. There's a lot of different places. So for us at Dangerous Cow Publishing, and the brands associated with Dangerous Cow Publishing, we have obviously the Urban Deer Complex, which was the book. And what we are trying to do right now is expand that website to be the hub for suburban hunting across the United States. And what we want is more writers, more people talking about suburban hunting, more people saying, this is what I'm experiencing. These are these things, because this subject is so specific to one of the fastest growing demographics in hunting. We also have Basic Huntsman coming out, another information-driven website, August 1st. We have a number of hunters. We're bringing hunters from all over the country. The idea, the long-term goal of this website is to have the basic discussion of whatever time primary game in the United States. So, for instance, white-tailed deer obviously is the biggest in the U.S. White-tailed deer is going to primarily drive the content coming out the date August 1st to say – anything from what does a deer track look like to how to hang your first tree stand. We're going to talk about it, and we're going to have guys who are experts talk about it, and we're going to have people who are doing it for their first time talk about it, which is just a very important thing. And the whole thing is we want to be very interactive. We want people to ask questions. We want people to get in there and feel like we don't want people to feel intimidated. And we want to give people the information to say, you know, when you go on the main part of the website, when it launches August 1st, it's going to say, start here, new to the hunt, like, boom, you click there. And the first thing it's going to tell you is how to take your hunter safety course, in what state you are, and where to go through it. Like, we're going to walk people through it. Some other stuff we have coming out in the future, specifically Searching, which is this film, Searching in New England Hunting Tale, which is about camp culture in northern New England and rough grouse hunting, which is going to be in the Advent. We have Carbon Wingprint, which is specifically a turkey hunting film about the carbon emissions of turkey hunting in comparison to corporate farming. We also have another film that we're going to be making over the course of this fall called Provider with Jake Bennett. Unbelievably talented hunter, amazing woodsman from upstate New York. You guys certainly learned it up there. This film is built on that idea that he's a family man. He works a full-time job, and he's a provider. And a provider is a hunter. That's what that story is going to be. We have another film coming out after the first of the year that's going to correlate with our third book, which is going to be The Seduction of Tom, which is a turkey hunting book. We're also going to release a film with that called Morning Thunder, because we killed 11 birds on film and didn't mean to. Again, I credit Jake Bennett. He's an unbelievable turkey hunter. As part of that, we have Whitetail Confidential, The Legend of the White Whale, which is my second book that's going to be coming out, which is a novel. There's also going to be a film associated with the Whitetail Confidential brand. And I want to say it as a brand because all the stories are different. But the Whitetail Confidential story is just that. It's that inside look into the hunter and an obsessed whitetail behavior. That's what the whole Whitetail Confidential brand is. And we're going to produce books and films. Specifically, we're going to do a film with Jake Bennett. called Against the Grain. This film essentially shows his obsession over this buck called Click, where she shoots. I was there to answer the phone call on film as soon as he shot it, when he was ready to have an anxiety attack after shooting it. Incredible story. I lived through it. I filmed through it as he lived through it. Amazing story. And that's that Whitetail Confidential, that confidential story, that story that you don't always share with everybody. Like my hunt for the white whale, people next to me knew that story. Other people didn't. That buck tore me to the ground. And that's the story that we try to tell with that brand. And these are some of the new brands that we're doing with Dangerous Cow Publishing, is just expanding out to show these different angles that people, you know, huntergreen.org, you know, the carbon wing print. We're expanding the website. We're eventually going to do a book specifically published for huntergreen.org that's all about pro hunting, conservation, really the standpoint to say, this is how we think about hunting. This is a man's evolution. This is how we are. You can't debate this. It's a very factually driven book. It's been in the works for some time. There's some new writers that have come up. We have a writer, Jesse, out of Connecticut, who recently wrote some of the articles that have been up there. He wrote this recent gun hunting article in light of the recent shooting about how you know, restricting gun ownership could hurt conservation. He wrote the article about wolf populations in the West. He's very talented. He's got a degree in forestry, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. I don't know. But that's what we want to do, is deliver just these different formats, these different subjects, and all these different things, and really deliver a new angle. So that's what we got coming up. This is going to be an exciting, from essentially September to you know, February, we're hitting the pavement hard. We get a lot of work that we sat on, and I think a lot of people after we published the Urban Deer Complex were like, what's next? You know, and honestly, I think the blogs that I wrote on the Urban Deer Complex were more powerful than some of the stuff in the Urban Deer Complex, but I'm a better hunter now. And a lot of people are asking me if there'll be a second version of the Urban Deer Complex, and to answer that question here, there will be. I'm not currently in the mindset for it. But my perception, if I feel like I can say confidently, if I hunted against the person who wrote the Urban Deer Complex to today, I could out hunt me. Things change, we adapt. And that's the most important thing I tell in my book, is it's exciting because we grew up in an environment where the whitetail deer is rapid, you know, it's rapid adaptation. And if you can't, you know, if the predator can't adapt with the prey, then the prey fails. And I tell that story in the book. You know, it's so important. And I say the most exciting thing about my book is, if my book doesn't work 10 years down the road, that's amazing, because that shows how rapidly adapting deer are. I know guys that talk about New Jersey, where deer come into bait sites looking up at the tree stands. That's rapid adaptation, because that's not happening in other places like Connecticut or New Hampshire that allows baiting. These are things that are informationally driven, educationally driven to regions. And to think that this is going on, a constant evolutionary process, is so important to the media content that we drive forward.
Busy man. I'm just, you know, it. Question, is your book on audiobook format? You have an
audiobook? No, we haven't done a digital version or an audio version. We're talking about it right now, because essentially a lot of people have asked, first of all, for a digital version. I use a Nook, so I understand. And a lot of people are asking for an audio version. We're talking about it. Honestly, we're more focused on other projects right now, sure, to get those done. Because you got to understand that there is, you know, a very core group of people that are working in this group. A lot of these, you know, these guys are volunteering their time. Kyle Potten out of New Jersey, 19 years old. He's editing a lot of this material. he's not getting anything out of it other than freezing his ass off up on Lake Champlain ice fishing, because that's literally, you know, he was ecstatic about that. Here I, you know, we went up to film this ice fishing film that we're about to, you know, we're going to release over the next 6 months called Lake in Between, which was filmed on Lake Champlain in Vermont, and it's a pike fishing film. I'm not a fisherman. I'm not an ice fisherman. It got, I think it was negative 10 degrees was the warmest we were there. And I have sat in my tree stand and froze my ass off for 150-inch bucks, but not for a pike that we're not going to eat. And that was a huge cultural gap for me. And this kid, 19 years old, ran out into this stuff like he was a champion. I tell you, at 33 years old, I was like, I don't know about this.
I'll stay in the truck.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that was Sean Callanan, who was the face of that film. And, you know, he's older than me. He's in his 40s. And, you know, I spoke about him earlier. I mean, he endured through that. I mean, we laughed because the first big fish they caught in the film, I was still sleeping in the trailer. And I'm a nightclub guy. People who do know me, you know, close up, I mean, I run a big nightclub in Boston, and I live nightlife. I'm notorious for pulling over on the side of interstate highways, you know, undressing out of $1,000 suits into hunting gear to go deer hunting. That's what I do. But, I mean, we were up there, and these guys woke me up the first morning, and they caught a bowfish that looked like this. You know, I joked the whole time we were there. It's like, you guys just got to, you know, you guys got to catch me, you know, the monster of Champ, the monster of, you know, Lake Champlain. And they pulled this bowfish out of the water. And when I say this thing was prehistoric, this thing was prehistoric. And I did research on him, and it turns out it's the only surviving fish from the Jurassic Age. And I'm looking at this thing and I'm going, we're this close to Champ, guys. You catch Champ on film, and Dangerous Cow Publishing is going to have his big break. But, yeah, we have a lot of stuff coming up. And, again, we're trying to drive these different cultures. Ice filming culture, not something that's filmed. We're in talks right now about doing some fly fishing films. We're trying to get more into fishing. I'm not a fisherman, like
I
said.
Oh, I got a guy for you.
Yeah, well, I definitely want to talk.
Because, oh, I got a guy.
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually going away in a couple of weeks with my brother to go bass fishing. He took me up there last year, and my older brother, unbelievable bass fisherman. We were kids, used to win tournaments all the time. I got him hooked on deer hunting about 2-3 years ago, walked him through shooting his first deer, and I have never put anybody in front of so many deer on a silver platter in my life and had them mess it up. I would put deer in front of him. I put deer in front of me, call me 10 minutes later after I left him in a tree stand, say, I just shot a deer. And I come back, lost it. I feel like you got to be kidding me. And the irony of it, these deer are 10, 15, 20 yards away. I mean, I couldn't have set him up in better spots. I mean, I wish I had this kind of guidance when I got into bow hunting. And he finally called me up after an entire deer season in the early December. He said, I just shot my first deer. And I go, well, you didn't shoot your first deer. But did you kill your first deer? And he goes, I did. And he goes, we rangefind it. I killed it at 45 yards. And I go, 45 yards? I put deer 10 yards in front of you. How did you not pull this off? And he goes, I don't know. So when I arrive on the scene of this, you know, first deer kill, I walk up on a skipper that must weigh about 50 pounds, and I'm going, you shot this thing at 45 yards, and I put 100 plus gear in front of you at 10. Like, how did this happen? But again, that's the culture. I mean, that's the amazing story for everybody, and that's the type of stuff we try to share. Dangerous Cow, you know, we want that. That honest to life story, that real culture, that, you know, we don't want the guy who's just answering the phone call of some guy who is a good hunter saying, hey, this deer's regular, come shoot it. We want the story of the guy that's out there killing it. We want the story of the guy that's dedicated to life, who has a real job, who's a real person. We're not professional hunters. I wrote a book that I feel like is very important, but I still work a full-time job that has nothing to do with hunting. I'm not a professional hunter. a semi-professional hunter, you could say, but I'm not a professional hunter, and I probably never will be, and that's a fact of the industry, but it doesn't make our stories less important. It makes them more important.
Yeah. I agree 100%.
Yeah, and if you're up to traveling to upstate New York, I've got a fly fishing guy and a great idea to film.
Yeah, well, we're open to anything. I mean, I'll tell you, we're actually in contact right now with a woman who's, I'm guessing her in her 60s, does forestry service. She's worked in the forestry service her whole life out of Virginia, and it's about a strange book about burning forests down and what their significance is, and I've never seen anything like it, and they came to Dangerous Cow Publishing and said, we want to publish with you, and that's those weird stories. That's it. We're about adventure. We're about that story. You know, as a kid, and you can read this, you know, on a lot of our sites, as a kid, I grew up reading Peter Capstick. I grew up, you know, reading about the Black Death, the Cape Buffalo, and these hunts, and these, you know, this legendary world. I haven't had that opportunity. Maybe someday I will, maybe someday I won't. But what I did do is turned passion out of what I had where I was. And that's so relevant to so many people, because that's what we have. And that's what we want to do with Dangerous Cow Publishing, is we want to tell that true story. That story of people who are from different parts of the world, different parts of the country, that have true stories, that are truly passionate, that are truly adventurous. Because, you know, even though I could see Boston in the skyline, you know, 30 miles from some of my tree stands, it was so adventurous. It was just like those Peter Capstick books. That buck was as elusive as those man-eating lions he hunted. They were as prized, as epic, as everything. And that's what we're trying to do here, is we're trying to tell that story. And at the same time, the most important mission of Dangerous Cow Publishing is that we bring people in that aren't hunters. That is our primary goal. And I tell you, it's an expensive goal. It costs us a lot of money, because it's a lot harder to hook somebody in who's never hunted before than it is to take somebody who's hunted. But that's what we're doing. We're creating hunters. And we're going to focus on that goal forever with Dangerous Cow Publishing, whether it makes us broke or not. That's what we're going to do. We're going to do these things to bring more people to our sport, to bring more people to this passion, and to expand what we are, because right now is the time to do that, and we have to take advantage of it.
Well said.
That's it, man. Hey, I don't know. Like I said, I'm looking forward to seeing the work and picking up the book, and I don't know, man. I got to thank Will for you know, inviting you on, because I've enjoyed this as much as any of the conversations we've had, just because it's hunters talking about hunting and how to make things better, and it's part of the movement, and I got to appreciate, you know, you guys, all your hard work and that labor of love. You know, it's exciting to see, and whether you're in the northeast part of the states or the mountain states, it's doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter.
Part of that same tribe. You know,
that's it.
We are. That's what it gets. I don't know if you guys wrote the first article from huntergreen.org, and it's called "How Meat Made Us Human," and it's been a very controversial article because, again, we're dominated by the Christian community. It talks about human evolution millions of years ago and how our decision as a species to eat meat created how complex our brain is today. That article has been reshared all over the country. It's got, you know, viral content. It's educational. It's about that idea. This is not, you know, it is a lifestyle. It is a tradition. Above that, it's our species. We are natural born predators. We are as complex as we are today. We can build the things we can, create the societies we can because of hunting. And that is called the hunting hypothesis. It's a real scientific theory that says that the reason why we've modernized as man is because of hunting. We created complex societies because we had to create complex, you know, systems to hunt. Yeah, language was created so we could coordinate complex hunts. You know, these are the things that people miss. And to think that this is the fundamental core of our species, it's a thing that we can relate further back than anything else we can do. It is the most primitive a natural act we can do. You know, in the original red meat, I specifically said that we're not tourists to the trees. We're a participating member of 100% organic system of life. We are part of the system. We're not foreigners to Mother Nature. We're not foreigners to the food chain. We are part of it for millions of years. And it is the most natural act we can do. And when people soul search, hunting is the absolute ultimate soul searching you can do, because this is the closest you're going to get back to the origins of your species.
You know, I'd agree. And I think some people might even say we're a species of natural born hunters.
Very accurate. Very accurate.
You like that one?
That's it.
Yeah, I'm pretty stoked. You know, I know we're going to wrap up here shortly, but here's another, this idea just came to me. Phil comes to the Northeast to hunt. He'll be the first film ever where someone from the West comes to hunt in the East.
You know what? It's so funny because we talk about this stuff all the time. Me and Jake Bennett is essentially really my right-hand man as far as vision. If I bounce ideas, if I have bad ideas, Jake Bennett's the one to tell me. If I have good ideas, he's the one to tell me. We go to him and I talk to him about these ideas, and it's the same thing for us. You know, we talk about going west and it's like, let's go west in elk hunt. And me and Jake joke because it's like elk hunting in our heads is just a really big version of turkey hunting. A really big version. We could be completely wrong, and I tell you, when we go, we're gonna film.
I kind of want to
find out whether we're that wrong
or not. Too.
Yeah. And that's what we'd like to do is to, you know, we talked about doing a film up in Kansas just for the simple fact that we wanted to do a film called There's No Place Like Home and do it in Kansas and hunt whitetails in Kansas and compare that to a hunter of the Northeast and say how different it was. I honestly, one of the big things, and you know, Phil, while we have you on here, one of the big things we want to see for basic huntsmen, we have turkey hunters, we have whitetail hunters, because those are the primary regions that all of us have been from. I get Midwest guys on here. What I don't have is elk hunters. And we understand that elk hunters, mule deer hunters represent a big part of this country that we're not a part of. I don't understand it. It's not my expertise. And what we want to do is open basic huntsmen to anybody who's hunting a core basic species in the U.S., whether it's whitetail deer, eastern turkeys, rios, you know, mule deer, elk, you name it. We want people to be able to reconnect on those subjects and informationally drive themselves on those subjects for people who will talk about the most basic things. For guys like us as experienced hunters, we can talk about complex tree stand setups, complex theories about deer behavior. But to understand that fundamental first kill, to understand that process is so important, and that's really what we do. We want experts talking about these very basic theories, and we want people who are new talking about their experience on these basic theories, which is just so important, because I can't tell you what it's like to kill a deer for my first time in 2015, because I did it, you know, God knows how many years, 15 years ago, you know, it's so long ago, and it's so important hearing those firsthand experiences side by side by those veteran experiences. And we need more people. And I stress that to anybody. I mean, and the amazing thing about basic huntsmen, you can, there's from here to there on where it is, and all this information in between is relevant. You could be this experienced, or this experienced, and your information is important to basic huntsmen, because being a hunter is an evolutionary process.
I agree. I mean, but even the guys that are up here, you know, that if they're still not learning something every day, and it could be they're learning an experience from a complete novice.
Yep.
You know, so that's just a great format, I think, what you guys have putting together there, because like I said, even the people that think they've done everything, there's always that situation that it's going to come about sooner or later, and they'll learn from it. So,
heck yeah. All right. Well, I guess it's time to wrap things up. This may be the record for our longest podcast.
I apologize.
No, man, it was good.
Informational. This is my fiance was here for most of it. This is the first time she's ever asked to come listen because she saw your stuff on huntergreen.org and thought it was cool. Wanted to come check it out. So,
well, we try to honestly, and I really, again, we want to hear from people. I can't express how important that is. Like, we can't come up with every idea. We've come up with some original ideas, but let me tell you, there's a wealth of information up there. If people are interested in huntergreen.org, email us. Say, hey, this would be important. This, you know, talk about this. Same for the Urban Deer Complex. Same for when Basic Huntsman comes out. We want to drive education forward. We want to grow the sport. We are so in line with that, and everybody we're working with is in line with that. Please interact with us, really.
I think we can push some people your way.
Yeah, I hope so. Well, everybody, that has been this episode of the Natural Born Hunter podcast. Next week, we will have on Ben Greenfield. Those of you who have never heard of Ben Greenfield, he's kind of an innovator,
biohacker, right? I mean,
the ultimate biohacker.
I'm not sure what's not bio, but he's the like. I don't know, man. If there's somebody that's looked into something about trying something for your health and your physical level or your physical fitness, if you're not familiar with Ben, look him up. He's very smart, and I'm excited to talk to him.
Yeah, he has the very successful podcast, the Ben Greenfield podcast, or you can go to bengreenfieldfitness.com and check it out. Really, when you talk to Ben, it's almost like talking to a person from the future. You know, he's that far ahead of the curve. So I'm pretty sure we'll have him on next week. We just got to hammer out a time and date and all that. But so if everything goes well, the next episode will be Ben. And for now, thank you very much, AJ, for coming on. This has been just a great pleasure talking to you. And as always, thank you, Phil.
All right, man. Good talking to you, AJ.
Thanks, guys. I enjoyed it.
Have a good day.